Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you listening in today, and great to have back Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. It's always fun when Jeff comes by. Today we'll deal with the whole variety of gardening questions and looking a bit today at the lawn and maybe at some alternative lawns. And I'll warn you right now, or invite you right now, I guess I should say, that Jeff has posted, or we have posted, a number of photos that Jeff has taken, and not only at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, but at several other places as well, that really kind of highlight some things that you might be able to do in terms of your own lawn. So I hope you'll join in today. We'll talk lawns, but certainly we'll talk other plants as well. And if you have a question for us, please join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Jeff Epping, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Lots of things going on at the gardens right now. I know you've got...
Well, the garden's beautiful right now.
Yeah.
We were talking before we got on the air about the lack of frost. So the garden's looking great. There's not a lot of fall color left, but of course the garden's chock full of ornamental grasses and beautiful shrubs and trees with bark and fruit. And it's just nice to enjoy the fall weather. And every day of 50 degrees or above is a bonus right now, right?
Absolutely.
So enjoy everyone.
Absolutely. Well, you're interested in alternative lawns, aren't you? Why that interest?
Yeah, I think America in general is known for, the great American lawn. It's they're everywhere. There's something like 40 million acres in it. It's equals about the size of Texas.
Across
the United States. And it really exceeds many of our crops, corn, wheat, soybeans, all of those put together. There's more fresh water that goes into a lawn than all those crops.
Oh, I didn't know that.
50 to 75% of our fresh urban water is going into our gardens and mostly onto the lawn. So, I think we just need to do a better job protecting the environment. And believe me, I love, golf and athletics and such. If we're using the turf, that's great. But, when you drive into some of our bigger cities and see these corporate landscapes where it's just, acre after acre of turf, and who sets foot on that turf, right?
I mean,
the guy's mowing it, spraying pesticides on it, fertilizing it, aerating it, all those things, and that's about it. So it doesn't offer a lot in the way of, protection or environmental input for our wildlife, butterflies, bees. All the talk these days is about how to encourage pollinators to our garden, how to help the monarch through this tough time that they're going through, and no better way than to give them, something to feed on and produce. And, it's just, I think it's just the way to go.
Yeah.
We do.
And the reason I have my lawn in the back is because I've got a 13-year-old daughter, and she's her best friend, the next door neighbor. They come over and they play on the lawn, so there's a use for it that. But I do different things in the front where they're not playing. But and there are a lot of. Think about alternative lawns. There's a lot of different ways you can go, aren't there?
Oh, there is. And, I guess the smallest jump might be just to grow grass varieties that are not so dependent on water and fertilizer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the fescues have proven to be so much more drought tolerant. And we have experimented with many different fine fescue blends as well as tall fescue, which is, it's just the common... grass that they would plant along roadsides in highway construction projects. And why do they do that? Because it's drought tolerant and salt tolerant, and it doesn't require all that water and fertilizer to keep it thick and help happy. So it just a small thing of renovating your lawn and infusing those types of grasses in goes a long way. So we'll still be mowing it, but at least we won't be watering it and putting the fertilizers and such on to keep it, healthy and happy and something that we want to play on, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about this kind of through the show. We'll bring different aspects of alternative gardens up and also take other questions. And Mark in Mequon has one for us, so let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hello, good morning, man. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a quick question. I have about a 200-year-old oak tree in the back of our yard. It was measured, and that's what they estimated the age to be. And I'm very concerned about it, just being very careful with it and keeping it healthy. And normally you would prune an oak tree after November 1st because of the oak wilt threat. And I'm wondering if, because it's been so warm, that we should wait and not prune it. We have one limb that we have to take off.
Mm-hmm. Well, typically once the trees go dormant, that's the time that you're in pretty good shape to go forward with pruning. And I'm assuming you're working with a certified arborist on the project, or is this something you're tackling yourself?
Well, it's something I'm going to tackle myself because it's only one small limb that we have to take off.
Okay.
And it's relatively close to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're safe as soon as the oak goes dormant. You agree with that, Larry? I know you've
served
on a number of tree boards dealing with this issue.
Yeah, I've sat on boards on this. I'd always err on the side of caution, but I wouldn't be in a big hurry to do it this week. But
right, and typically if we don't have a lot of pruning to do, I like to do it closer to spring, say in February, March, so that when the wound is opened, it doesn't have a long time until it begins the healing process. Anything you would prune now, the tree is dormant and it's not going to start that callus tissue and healing process until growth ensues in spring. So typically I put it off, at least in my home garden. At Olbrich, we have so many plants that we prune all winter long. And it's still all good, but if I had a choice, and sounds like it's a pretty small project. And then one of the things you want to pay attention to is, how you make that cut. And there's a lot of good research that shows, you want to prune just outside the branch collar. So that old, cut it flush is not the way to go. It's a little bit outside that zone. And there's a lot of good websites and diagrams and photographs that'll guide you to that proper cut.
Okay, but you would recommend February, March instead of now?
I would, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, sure. There was some research on this, and you probably know about it, Jeff, where there were some trees, limbs cut, and then they actually sat and watched how long it would take for the bugs to get to the tree, and it was something like 7 minutes.
That is amazing.
To me, I saw those, I saw that figure, and I thought, oh, my goodness, you never... You want to be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And, lucky for you to have a beautiful old tree like that, and lucky for the tree to have somebody that cares enough to pay attention to that and really protect that tree, because it's so sad when we see beautiful old trees that suffer horrible construction damage and pruned at the wrong time and all the things that,
And they could have lived another 50, 100 years.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Sally in Superior has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have a question. I live up here, and it's in a raised bed, or kind of a raised bed. I shouldn't say the bed is raised, but I have stuff around it, and it's dry. And I have a fern peony and a bleeding heart. And I'm wondering, when this bed is so dry, should I give them a little drink of water? But then it's warm out here, and I don't want them to start to grow either. Because we're having during the day 40, 50 degrees.
Sure. I think at this point in time, with the colder night temperatures and the shortened day length, the trees are into shrubs, whatever, perennials are into a dormancy state. So giving them a good soaking isn't going to, won't pop them out of that. Especially at this time of year, we often recommend to thoroughly soak in any evergreen material that you have so that isn't going into the winter dry. And then, of course, once the soil freezes, those plants can't take any more moisture out of the soil. So they can still lose moisture, but they can't take any up. So it's always good to give them a good soaking.
So it would be good
to
get, the peony has the tubers, of course, and the bleeding heart, I don't know what it has, but
right. You
usually can't kill that. But
right. And I think, they're probably fine just as they are, but, if you're worried about
it. I don't want to lose the fern leaf peony. It's a very special plant to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was. So you could say I give it a little drink.
Yeah, you know, just thoroughly water it. You know, soak it good so that it thoroughly roots. You don't want to just put a little across the top. You know, soak it good like any type of watering you do in the garden, and then you should be good to go for the rest of the year.
You bet. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Allie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And George in Partyville has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, George.
Hello. How are you guys? Good.
Thank you. We're great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind, George?
So getting back to pruning up the trees. Now, a couple questions. I had one beautiful weeping willow that just split right in half, okay? So I finished cutting it, got rid of the half. But I've also seen guys prune the limbs off of trees, and then they paint them with some sort of a product. Some use black rubbery stuff. Some guys use paint. I'm just a little confused on what to seal all that up with.
Well, you don't have to seal it up with anything.
Yeah, in fact, you shouldn't.
Exactly. Yeah, those tree wound paints, they've done a lot of research with them, and they found out they actually do more damage to the tree than good. So I wouldn't worry about it. And I'm surprised they even sell them anymore. I didn't even know you could still find those around. But
they tend, the one use that I see for them is for oaks when they are damaged in the summertime,
right,
and they need to be trimmed. Then you take the chance and put it on because you don't want the infection coming in.
Right, that's oaks and elms would be another one. Right, so if you had a tree that suffered storm damage and it has this jagged open wound, you would want to make a proper cut on that and then protect it. And what it's doing there is keeping the insect from that open wound and the potential of spreading disease.
And then I've seen another person actually take like a piece of rubber roofing and put it over that wound. So that's not a good idea either.
No, oftentimes then it holds in excess moisture and then it leads to rot and it leads to more problems than good. So if you have the choice, you prune during the dormant season, as we talked about a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. But those wound dressings or tree paints are only used in case of emergency, if you will, or a damage to the tree during the season.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot, George, for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to go back to lawns for just a minute. As we think about the types of alternative lawns that are out there, you talked a little bit about grasses. What else could you be talking about today?
Yeah, so if you have a chance to look on the Facebook page, you'll see there's over about 30 different images that I put up that I have included in presentations that I give around the area to master gardeners and other gardening groups, and it demonstrates some different alternatives. So one that we've been doing a lot with, if you have a sunny area, grass, a great native grass that really makes a beautiful meadow, we call it. Meadow means to mow, and really we'd only mow it once a season, which is a beautiful thing. It's prairie drop seed, Spirobolus, which gets up to about 2 feet, maybe a foot and a half in foliage, and then maybe up to 2 to 3 feet in flower. And I have some images of it during the season and then in the fall in a beautiful golden fall color. And now in that situation, you're not going to be playing croquet on it, of course, or football. You basically just make a walking path through that area, and that's what we've done at the garden. And I've seen it done all over the country. And it's a plant
beautiful.
That you plug it in on about, 18-inch to 2-foot centers, let it go for about, 2 years. It'll be nice and full. What we do is either mow it back in the spring, and now actually we're burning it, which is great fun, of course, burning anything out in the garden. But it helps because it releases the nutrients back into the soil, and it just thrives. More times than not, we're cutting them by hand, and then we just mulch it and use it as the mulch right in the bed. So prairie drop seeds is a good one if you have a very shaded area. And again, we had some little lawn panels that were bluegrass turf. We had lots of trees around, and after 15 years, those little trees became big trees, and of course, you know, typical bluegrass turf doesn't like that shade. So we converted them over to sedge meadows, or sedge little panels, and we used the native Pennsylvania sedge, Carex pennsylvanica. We used Carex radiata, Carex rosea. There's a lot of different native sedges. A lot of them, to be honest with you, looking at them, you can hardly tell one from the other. The ones that we used in this instance are nice, fine, fine bladed. They only get about 6 inches tall. They bloom in the spring, so after the blooms fade away, then you just have this beautiful green panel. And again, they don't like to be stepped on, so they're not something that you're going to be playing on all the time, but you just create a little flagstone path or a gravel path or whatever you want through that area, and you get the effect aesthetically of a lawn without all the care. So in the instance of both of those, we mow them in the spring, and that's it, and they're good the rest of the season. Now, is there a weeding to do? Of course, especially in the establishment period. But after they fill in, it's surprising how little maintenance.
They're good competitors.
They are, and you know, and think about how much time you have to put into a typical lawn. So you know, the much less time that you would put into one of these alternatives is still way less than you would put in a typical lawn. And we're not mowing them. We're not fertilizing them, we're not watering them, so the environmental input is much, much less in those alternatives.
On Garden Talk today, we're talking with Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. I'm Larry Mueller, KP Whaley, our on-air producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder that we talk about gardening every Friday on The Larry Mueller Show, and you can listen to past shows as well by going to WPR.org, or you can download the WPR radio app. Love to have you do that as well. Visiting with Jeff Epping of Old Brick Botanical Gardens, let's go to Tony in Waukon, Iowa next. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What can we do for you today?
Yeah, I'm wondering, I have a brick house. I'd like to train some sort of fruit tree to attach to it. Has he heard of that, and does he have any recommendations?
Absolutely. In fact, I have the exact same thing going on in my own home garden.
Is that right?
Yeah, I have a south-facing wall, and I have a very narrow bed. It's only about 18 inches wide, if that, between my house and the driveway. So I didn't have a lot of options, and I wanted to get some shade on that south side of the house. And I could have used a vine, of course, but I thought, you know what? I love espalier. And for those of you who know what espalier is or don't know what it is, it's basically training a plant, typically a tree, in just one plane. So literally you're growing it along the side of the house from side to side. And any branches that come, you know, outward, you prune off. And it's tiered typically, and there's a lot of different patterns you can use. But if you just Google image espaliered fruit trees, you'll see that people often use apples. I have apples. I have zestars, which are awesome. And I also have pears. And we have a few at Old Brick as well. And it's actually a lot of fun. I mean, I love to prune. And I started out from scratch. I just used just bare root whips that I bought at a local garden center and just trained them over the years. So they started out pretty small and wimpy looking, but now they're up to about 8 feet tall. And I don't really want them to get any bigger because I don't want to have to jump up on a ladder to do it. And I have three of them side by side, and they all touch on the edges. And that's the way I prune them, and they produce fruit. You know, in Europe, especially like England, they grew fruit trees like this, not because necessarily it was decorative, although it is, but because that's the way they could get the fruit to ripen, because it's such a, cool climate that fruit like, apples just, it wouldn't ripen before, the end of the season was done. So they put them against a south or west facing, wall. typically stone or brick, and then that would re-radiate the heat and keep it a little bit warmer and allow the fruit to ripen. So it's definitely you can do it. And to start out, I'd say apple is probably the easiest. You might want to get a couple varieties because they like to be cross-pollinated for best fruit production. Pears definitely need to be cross-pollinated, and you know, if you look up that info on the internet, you'll quickly see what cultivars to pair with each other for the best pollination and fruit set. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think you'd enjoy it.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Thanks very much for calling. And Mary and Toma, we are on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about my lawn. I always had a beautiful lawn when I lived over in the Green Bay area. And now we live outside of Toma in basically a wooded area, a couple acres. The moles and voles are horrible. You could break your ankle trying to walk through my yard.
And so you have what? What do you have for grass in your lawn? Typical sort of bluegrass turf and that sort of thing?
That's what I'm thinking it is.
Yeah, and do you use your lawn for other things? I mean, do you play out there? Do you using it recreationally, kicking a soccer ball around, that sort of thing? Or is it something
not
that
anymore.
You just...
No, the kids are all grown up and gone. Now it's just my yard work.
There you go.
Pick up the leaves and... cut the grass.
Right. So I think this is a perfect application for something other than that typical lawn that you would mow on a regular basis. Why not try one of the native prairie grasses? If something shorter like prairie drop seed, or if it's real dry up in your region and sandy, something like side oats, grama grass, or a combination. It doesn't have to be just one thing. In fact, I'm just prepped the site at Olbrich to plant next spring, where we're going to combine probably 10 to 15 different both grasses in the sunny areas and sedges in the shady areas, and to make it a little more interesting with texture and height and all those things. So, I think, this would be a good time to, think about eliminating what it is you have there, and you don't have to do it all at once. You can do it over a few years, and if need be, and try something a little different. If there's moles making holes and all that out there, so be it. You're not walking on it all the time. You're not mowing it every week, right? So maybe it won't be quite a big deal, and it may not be as attractive to them as well. If you have shady areas, there's a lot of our native sedges that would love to grow in that situation. In fact, I deer hunt up in the Adams Friendship area and walk in some of the woodlands there, and they are just carpeted with Carex pennsylvanica, the native Pennsylvania sedge, and it thrives. And so why not go with something that is well adapted to your conditions and wants to be there, rather than something you have to artificially water, fertilize, mow to keep it happy and healthy.
Yeah, why not? Something to think about, Mary. And there are sources out there.
Yeah, I mean, I travel around the Midwest. I probably have 10, 15 lectures set up, and one of the most popular of my lectures is creating meadow gardens, just what we're talking about today, and also gravel gardens, which is another alternative to the typical lawn that you would have. Both are much lower in maintenance than a lot of our gardening techniques, and make a lot of sense in this day and age. Also, I know, places like Prairie Nursery, you have Neil on your show from time to time. He's a good source of that sort of thing, too. Put in a number of no-mow lawns and also, obviously, prairies and meadows and that sort of thing. So that might be a place to start if you need somebody to, consult with you and install. And, of course, they grow and sell those plants that you would need to establish that. In the Toma area, there may be other companies and landscape firms up there that would have some experience doing that as well.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it, Mary. Rosemary in Fountain City, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We planted two elderberry bushes 2 years ago because the fruit is supposed to be so healthy when you make it juice out of it in combating colds. But I also read that if you don't prune it after the first year, your fruit will be less each year. And we don't have a clue how to prune it. It said cut the old branches off, but we can't recognize old from new. How do I prune an elderberry bush?
Well, typically, we prune 99% of the shrubs at the garden and elsewhere is through what they call a renewal pruning process. So we're taking out about a quarter to a third of the oldest shoots out of the plant each dormant season. And what that does then is rejuvenates the plant. So, because when you prune, when you make a cut, you're actually stimulating new growth, allowing dormant buds to break and form new shoots in the plant. So if you prune out a quarter or a third of the oldest canes every year, you'll have no canes within that shrub that are more than 3 to 4 years old. And so you don't build up a lot of dead wood, which is more prone to insect and disease problems.
And it all looks the same. How do I recognize the oldest cane?
Well, typically the older canes are bigger in diameter or not always in the beginning because they don't have a lot of different aged shoots because you just, it's a new plant. So you might just prune out a few, and then you'll see the new shoots coming up from the base of the plant. Many people, when the new growth comes up, they cut that off.
Yeah.
And that's very typical of, say, a common lilac, and they see these suckers coming up, and they think, oh, my God, that's not good, and they prune them all off. Well, that's the stuff you want to keep. That's
okay.
That's what you want to happen. That's the response you want when you prune. So I don't know how many canes you might have on the plant at the moment. And elderberry is one that sometimes doesn't produce a lot of shoots in the beginning. It needs some time to do that. So, prune out a couple at least, let them form or break new canes from the base, and then get in that sort of yearly rotation.
Yeah, next year it'll be easier.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And is this the time of the year that I should do it?
Yeah, again, anytime during the dormant season. If you want to wait, closer to spring, that would be perfectly fine as well. But anytime that you'd have time from now till then, we'll work.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thanks so much for calling. Let's turn to Jim in Waukesha next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We had two arborvitaes planted, one on either side of the front door, 10 years ago, I would think. And I can't tell you the exact variety, although they are very, very pointed at the top. The question is, one has always been like a foot taller than the other.
Mm-hmm.
So you might say, well, the obvious solution is to, just cut the taller one off. And I'm afraid to do that. Or should I be afraid to do that as far as hurting the way it's going to grow in the future?
Right. Now, for the future, are you okay with those growing as tall as they will? I mean, I don't know how old they are exactly, but they may grow another 10 feet. Is that okay in the situation that you're in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that in that case, I mean, arborvitae can be sheared. Just like Japanese yews, which everybody turns into little meatballs in front of their foundation of their house. But oftentimes yews can be sheared to make formal hedges or whatever, too. So in this instance, you might, if you want to even them up, shear the taller one a bit, but don't eliminate the what we call the central leader, or the if it has a central leader. Oftentimes there may be three or more. But we try to keep one if we can, and the reason is that if we have one leader and we get heavy snows or ice or whatever, that one leader tends to be strong, whereas if we have a multiple, they often start to, open up and kind of split open. And so anyway, if it, you know, if the plant's older, you may not have quite the opportunity to develop a central leader again, but you may, you could, find the most central and strongest and favor that one and then, hand prune back the others to kind of turn them into more of a side branch or limb, if you will, over time. That's not going to happen overnight. So you can do a little bit of that to even them up, and then you could also lightly shear that a bigger one to reduce the size a bit, but don't remove that leader.
And then they'll
probably, you know, you can, over several years, you should be able to sort of even them up again if that's what mainly you're after.
Okay, right? Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining. Appreciate your call. Some open lines will get you on fairly quickly now with your gardening question at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, the email address talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's turn to Sue in Appleton next. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Larry and Jeff. Thanks for the program today. I have a problem with my north-facing slope. It used to have bluegrass on it. It has white pine in the area, and I'm experiencing erosion now that the bluegrass, and I even tried some shade grasses, they have all died. Any suggestions on what to put in next?
Yeah, I would try some of the sedges. You say it's north-facing, so I assume it's always in the shade, correct?
Correct.
Right, and the thing that's probably more limiting than anything is the moisture, because a large tree has lots of roots, and it makes it tough for plants to, at least to get started. Once, if you select the right plants that are adapted to the shady conditions and the drier conditions, then typically, you know, once you get them going with a little help with some watering, you know, you'll be able to be successful. So, again, if you want it to be a more of a grassy look, I'd look to some of the sedges that are out there. So something like the Pennsylvania sedge. There's also a non-native sedge, which is a real tough guy, and that's the blue sedge, or Carex glauca or flaca. You sometimes see it as, but Carex glauca, G-L-A-U-C-A, is a real, you know, pretty aggressive sedge. It's not going to run away into the, you know, into the horizon on you, but you need something that's going to be tough in that situation, and that's one I might try along with some of the native sedges that would be available from nurseries that, you know, are selling those native plants, which is typically the prairie nurseries. The ones that are into ecological restoration type plantings are the ones you'll find. And in this day and age of, you know, mail order nurseries, you should be able to find it that way if you can't find it locally.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. And David in Harvard, Illinois, we're on to you. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a garden I want to establish. It's about 50 foot by 100 foot, so it's quite large. And I have grass there now, a mixture of grass, clover, plantain, other weeds. What would be the best approach? I've heard just tilling it under. I've heard sod cutting it out, sheet mulching it. So I just want to know what's the best way so I get less weed impact.
And you're going to, this is going to be a vegetable garden you're converting us to, or this is more an ornamental garden, or a little
bit of both? No, it's vegetable garden.
Vegetable garden. So, you know, most people who want to eliminate something that's going to be a vegetable garden don't want to use chemicals because they're worried about, you know, the impact of that on the food that you're going to, you know, grow and eat. So, you know, there's different organic, if you will, methods, and one would be to cover that whole area with a sheet plastic. If the plastic thing bothers you, which some people don't even want that, then cardboard or newspaper and a thicker layer, laying it over the top. I would mow it before you do that. I would kind of scalp it, mow it really, really tight to the ground with your mower, and then cover it up. And, you know, might take a little while for that to happen, but, you know, just pull some of it up, see how it responds after about a week or 2 weeks or so, if anything's coming back. If not, then you're probably good to go. You know, this time of year, the turf is going to be going dormant anyway, yeah. So it might take a little longer. But, you know, when it starts to want to get going in the spring, you'll have it all covered up, and it won't get any light. And, I can't say from experience how long that takes because I haven't done a lot of it. Any thoughts, Larry?
Well, it's going to take a little bit of time. Sometimes I know if you're going for a prairie or something like that, you'd even go a whole season.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. See, I'll be honest with you, when we create some of these meadows and they're in turf, we'll use glyphosate or Roundup, just in that one occasion to eliminate all those guys, and then we convert it over, and then, you know, and then in the future we're not really using any type of pesticides on it, so I feel like it's kind of justified, at least in my mind.
And the other approach is simply you could till it under and you could plant, and but then you would be in a situation where we were talking about earlier with using a lot of mulch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And mulching that area, you know, between the rows so that you are keeping those weeds down.
Right.
And over time, you're going to.
Right. And you mentioned sod cutting. You know, that's not works. A bad option either, because there you're getting rid of, you know, a big amount of the
seed.
Root systems and seed. Yes, yes. Anytime you till, you know, you're bringing up weed seeds from below. And so more and more research has been showing that tilling really is not the best thing for the health of the soil, beyond just bringing up all those weeds that will want to germinate again. But like Larry said, the mulch will help immensely to keep any weeds from coming up, no matter what method you use. And I'm a huge advocate of using, you know, the organic matter in your own garden. And we were talking mm-hmm. earlier about, you know, right now all the leaves have been falling, and I break out my mower and put my bagger on there, which I never do during the season, to pick up all those leaves and anything else that's in there. I even mow over some of my perennials with it, and it all goes into a nice, fine consistency, and I mulch my garden with that right now. I just spread it out on top of the soil. Spring, it's all good to go. I already have mulch down. The plants come up amongst it, and it's, you know, cooling the soil, keeping the weeds down, preserving moisture in the soil, all the great things that mulches do. And I have it here. It's right here on my site. It's all around me. And I have neighbors who have larger trees. A lot of their leaves fall. I just go out on the curb on the street and mow those up too if I need more. And it's all good. So there, you know, I hope that answers your question.
I hope
your
that helps.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here visiting with Jeff Epping from Olbrich Botanical Gardens. And Donna in Milwaukee has a question next. Hi, Donna. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I very much enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I have a rugosa rose, and I need to. I'm meaning to transplant it. I inherited it. There's a fence there now. It doesn't get the sun that mm-hmm. that I would like it to. Or, you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
After the big rain at the end of the summer or the beginning of the fall, I'm not sure what it was, 4 inches or whatever. It died. It just fell back. It turned. You know, it just. Suddenly, I went there to look at it thinking, okay, I think I'll do this rose after I do this other one, which I already did one. Anyway, I dug down, and it has suckers from trees coming into it. It's one of those ones where you cut the sucker, or you cut the branch down, and then six more take its place next season. Well, it turned out that I knew it was there, and I was cutting it back while the rose was growing, but I didn't realize how bad it was. And it's like it came up to the center of the rose. The roots are fanned around. It has these beautiful red roots. I couldn't believe how red they were. And you know, they fan out like the other rose that I had transplanted. So in the center is where you put the hill. That's where the all the suckers are up. They came up right through that middle part. Well, I cut the roots that were leading into the rose. I haven't cut the rose roots yet. Mm-hmm. Do you think I should forget about it, just leave it and give, you know, maybe...
Get a
new one?
Well, that may be the easier thing, but if it has some sentimental value to it, then what I would do... because roses of all sorts are easily transplanted bare root. And when you plant a bare root rose, this is the time you would do it, either, you know, now or early spring when the plants are completely dormant. So if you wanted to move it, I would you know, get down as deep as you can with your shovel, a good foot or 18 inches, dig up the whole mass, separate that alien tree from the rose root, which I think you should be able to tell, because you're gonna knock the soil off of it, all of it. You know, so you can really see what you got, and then just take the rose piece and transplant it into a nice sunny area that you have prepared for that, and that rose should do just fine. You know, coming up next spring, and you'll be good to go. Now, if it doesn't have sentimental value to you, then you certainly can just say, you know what, I'm done with it, and buy a new one.
Yep, there you go. Good. Yeah, thanks, Donna, for calling. Shane in Beloit, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi there. So we have been wanting to plant a mulberry tree for a while now, but we don't even know where to begin. Like, where do you get a sapling? When's the best time of year to even plant it? And is there any, like, you know, special upkeep that comes with a mulberry tree?
Well, to be honest, mulberries in our area are considered a weed.
Really?
Yeah, they're very they self-seed very prolifically. A lot of people don't like them for the fact that, you know, the fruit is kind of a mess. The birds eat the fruit and then deposit the fruit along with their droppings, and it stains and all those things. But, you know, that's one man's opinion, right? I mean, what's the definition of a weed, Larry? It's something like a plant that you don't want or growing in the wrong place or whatever. So one man's weed is another man's, you know, great plant. So, if you want to do that, I would guess at this time of year, or you might find a friend who's a gardener and just dig one out of his garden and move it over. I don't know that anybody sells mulberries. Maybe they do, Larry.
I don't know. I've never looked for one.
Yeah. It seems to me that if you want them for the fruit, I assume that's why you want to plant it. Is that true? Okay. You could probably just harvest them along bike trails, fence rows here, there, and everywhere. I mean, because they really are quite prolific and they're all over the place. If you want a tree, you know, for, you know, I guess if I wanted a fruit tree, I would probably pick something other than that. But with that said, hit the internet and type in Morris alba. MORUSALBA. That's the genus and species of the mulberry, and I bet somebody's selling them.
Yep.
Somewhere.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. You may not be happy with them down the road.
Well, I don't want to discourage. You know, if that's right. But I just as soon plant a nice tart cherry tree or something that you know will be a little easier to deal with.
On to Rick in Madison. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for the answer my call, and I love your show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations for blueberry bushes for the Madison, Wisconsin area.
Well, I must admit I'm not an expert on blueberry varieties, but I would guess that the UW Extension has a great publication on that. So I would look into that on the internet. You know, blueberries are an ericaceous plant that like acid soil, so you'll have to amend the soil more than likely to make them happy. And but if you do, you know, you'll be rewarded for it.
And it's not something you do once, by the way, either.
You would typically try to acidify the soil with various organic components, usually, you know, peat moss or something like that. And then there's sulfur or iron sulfate or, that you would add on a regular basis. There's fertilizers that actually have an acidification component to them as well. So, yeah, it's something that you will be dealing with season after season. Just so you know that, you know, now if you go to like
final step, and I'm aware of that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So yeah, I would hit that, site, or even like Michigan State probably lists, you know, has something like that to a publication, you know, in Michigan along the lake. Of course, they have very acid soils, and
yeah,
you go over there and there's fields upon fields of blueberries, but, or even in northern Wisconsin where the soils are more acidic, they do a little better with them than we do here in Madison area.
I would recommend the place where you're going to plant them, I'd recommend taking a soil test. Mm-hmm. And then when you send the sample in, and there's a soil and plant testing lab for mm-hmm. that,
right.
Tell them that you are interested in growing blueberry bushes in that area. And then you'll get what your pH is, and then they'll also recommend what you need to do in order to acidify the soil to the point where you're going to get a good crop. So I think $7 or $10 or whatever it is soil test, it'd be well worth it.
You bet.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mike in, I'm not sure. In Michigan, where in Michigan are you, Mike?
I'm about 45 miles south of the Mackinac Bridge on the west side of the state, right on Lake Michigan.
And the name of the town is Charlebois?
It's Charlebois.
Charlebois, okay. Mm. There we go. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got two questions. Hopefully both are easy for you. I've got massive maple trees and a massive oak tree, and by massive I mean 50, 60, 70 feet tall, 6 feet diameter, native, been there forever.
Wow, nice.
Recently, cool. Yeah, and I'm trying to save them because, like I said, they're probably original to before the town, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Recently, I'm losing big limbs, like not even in storms necessarily, but I had great foliage, beautiful trees 10 years ago. 2 years ago, I lost a limb on one tree, and now I'm losing three trees. I'm losing this massive oak tree. I've lost three huge limbs. I don't think there's any way to save it. And I've got two of those giant maple trees that are dropping big limbs and are losing pretty much everything in the center as far as their branches and on top.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to save those, or are they just dying of age?
Well, I think, you know, if you really care about the trees, I would hire a certified arborist in your area to really, you know, get up and take a look. You know, the interior limbs on trees often get shaded, and, you know, the tree does shed those, and, you know, maybe that's what's happening, but maybe, you know, there's some serious internal rot on the trunk of that tree, and it's, yeah, like you say, this kind of, you know, aged out, if you will. But there's no way of really knowing that unless you really get up there and take a look. And, boy, if I had trees like that, I would definitely, you know, invest the...
Spend a couple $100 on a certified...
Yeah, and really, and you know, do a little research to find out who the best arborists are in your area and take that route. And, you know, they'll be able to tell you for sure.
Okay.
And I would go with a certified arborist.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, you want somebody who knows the business and keeps up on the latest research and techniques and all that. That's the type of person you want.
Okay. Well, I lost a massive ash tree to the Emerald Ash Borer.
Mm-hmm.
We tried everything to save that ash tree, and it, you know, it was costly, and we still lost it, but it was worth trying.
Yep, absolutely.
The other question I had is, on my other trees that are healthy, I've got kind of an alternative lawn, like you're saying. I just let whatever grows, and when it dies, it dies. I don't water, I don't fertilize, and I don't mow it, unless if it needs it. So
mm-hmm.
Is it safe to plant, you know, around the bottom of the tree? Is it safe to plant plants around those trees, vines or, you know, flower beds or anything, or should I leave those a certain distance away from the bell of the tree?
Well, yeah, you don't got to go real close to the main trunk of for sure. I'd probably stay several feet away at least, and then even then it'd be some like perennials or something that you could plant in that area. But when you do that, you do it over time. You don't want to impact that root system all at once, and you certainly don't want to take a rototiller underneath a tree and do anything like that, because the major amount of roots are in the top.
4 inches?
Yeah, I mean, 12 inches of soil or whatever, and that's exactly where you would do the most damage. And people just don't get that oftentimes. They think, oh, it's a huge tree. The roots are down 10 feet, and, I can't hurt it. Well, you can kill a tree in a hurry if you damage all those roots. So with that said, they, a little here, a little there, and then just plant, smaller plants and just dig the holes, where you're putting the plant. You don't have to make giant holes and work up all the soil to plant beneath the tree. So it's something slow and easy, and again, using small plants will be the way to go. And then, of course, again, anytime you plant underneath a big tree, the competition is fierce for moisture. So know that you're going to have to baby those plants quite a bit to get them to get established.
And they're competing with the tree for
absolutely,
water.
Absolutely. And so sometimes the tree benefits a little bit if you're doing all the watering to keep those other plants, to get them established, the tree's benefiting as well. But again, if you overdo it and damage those roots of the tree, then, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, definitely not a good thing. And sometimes people just say, oh, the heck with it, and they mulch
right.
that area, because then they don't have to worry about the water competition and all the rest
right.
of it.
Right.
Jeff Epping is our guest today. Always fun to have Jeff with us. He is Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I hope you go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and see all the wonderful photos he's posted there for Garden Talk. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always fun to have Jeff stop by, and certainly glad to have him with us and glad to have you listening in. And Jeff, I want to go back to the photo. We talked earlier in the show that you supplied us with a number of photos.
Mm-hmm.
And some from your lawn, which is just fantastic, the work that you've done with that lawn.
Well, thank you. It's been fun. There's shots. If you look at those pictures, you'll see there's some residential shots, and those are of my home. So the front was bluegrass turf. I converted that to a fine fescue or this no-mow blend or carefree blend. And you'll see the picture of it, and it looks like, grass with a bad hair day, it all kind of swirls around, and it's beautiful. And I mow that, I mow it in the fall. When I pick up all my leaves, I kind of mow it down, and I do it at about the highest setting on my mower, and then it's good to go. And then it goes into the spring and does its thing, and I don't mow it the whole season. And the back space, if you see the pictures, you'll see a couple chairs in there that I made. They're called Wave Hill chairs. They're kind of fun, a type of Adirondack. But that was all bluegrass turf, too. Well, so we've been in the house for 12 years, put a lot of trees in the beginning, and I had lots of sun, so the bluegrass was fine. But as the trees matured and I got a lot of shade, the bluegrass struggled, and I thought, all right, now's the time to practice what I preach, right? So I eliminated all the turf with glyphosate, and there's some pictures of that, and it's very brown, and then I plugged it. I just used small plugs. There's come to about 50 per tray, so they're not very big. It's a fairly small space, so I was able to do that. I used about 5 to 6 different sedges. There's a little sun in the middle, so I went with some really cool grass called Blonde Ambition, side oats gramagrass or gramagrass, which has beautiful seed heads.
Mm.
So the shots, this is just one season, the mature shots of it. So that all happened this year. So I put stepping stone path in. I did a little patio in the back. And, we have a little pocket park out beyond us, which, is so popular in Madison. So I have the grass back there to throw a frisbee on or whatever. And so this little space, I thought, I'll do this. And so
it's beautiful.
In the future, I'll just mow it in the spring. It'll be good to go the rest of the season. And I have very minimal amount of weeding that I did this season. A lot of the weeds actually were I got as bonus gifts with the plants that I bought. You know, they were right there at the base of the perennials or grasses. So I, you know, worked at those a little. But I mulched in between all the plants with leaf mulch and, you know, added water a little bit to get them going. But it was a beautiful season, and we had so much rain that it was pretty easy to get established. And,
it is really beautiful. And as you're listening today, I hope you'll take a minute either during the show or after to go to the Facebook page. It's The Larry Mealer Show. That's the title of our page. And right in, kind of in the middle of the page and down a bit, you're going to see those pictures, those photos, and they're really... And to for me, to start with those very small plugs and then to have this really full...
Yeah, I personally was kind of surprised how quickly it came about. Again, I had, you know, the Pennsylvania sedge. I had Carex glauca, the blue-green sedge, it's called. And there I had three varieties of that. One was a little dwarf one that I put in between the flagstones. So as you step
really
across,
pretty.
You see them. And then a wider-bladed one. And then I put hackone, Japanese hackone grass, which I already had in the garden on the perimeter. So I just divided those and put those in place to give it some, you know, a little bit of interest and variety rather than just being all flat in one plane. And again, I think that will become more prominent as the garden matures. So I think by the end of next season, it'll be pretty full. You won't see any mulch in between the plants, and that's the whole idea.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Well, Bonnie and Cecil has a question for you, so let's go to her now. Bonnie, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I live on Channel Lake, and we planted maple trees probably about 25 years ago, and now we can't walk out on our lawn without stepping on roots.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do short of eliminating the trees?
Well, they're pretty shallow rooted, those maples, aren't they, Jeff?
So yeah. So what it's the only, I guess my thought is, well, what's the problem? Just walk somewhere else. Because I'm of the, you know, a beautiful old tree versus grass. Well, I'd pick the tree any day of the week. I can grow grass into various locations to get from one point to the other. I mean, have you thought about maybe just putting some type of stepping stone, flagstone, or a geometric paver, something like that? Even a crushed gravel path, you know, the root system, you know, would be impacted a little bit by that. But if you just kind of place it over the soil, maybe put landscape fabric down on top of the area where you're going to create the path and then put the gravel down. Stepping stones might be the better thing if that's, I don't know what the design of your overall design is and, you know, if it's formal, informal, whatever. But I guess I'd try to work with the situation and think about the alternatives. You know, is it absolutely necessary you walk there? And if it is, the stones or is that type of path or even a raised path. You know, you could put sink 4x4s in, do like a little boardwalk planting across that zone to get to the other place. Again, I can't see what you're describing, but, you know, get a garden designer to think, you know, creatively about it for you and come up with the solution.
We use our yard we've got dogs, we've got kids, so we're running and playing.
Mm-hmm.
I really wouldn't want to get rid of the grass. So I'm saying you can't cut roots, correct? Because
no.
That will kill the tree.
Correct.
You can't, and you can't cover it either. I mean, if you tried to put more soil down over the top of the roots, you'd kill the tree.
Do you know?
Okay.
Do you know what kind of maple it is?
No.
What does it look like in the fall?
It's yellow.
Okay. I mean, there are some, you can't cover that. You couldn't do that over the entire root system for sure. I mean, if it's one side of the tree and you slowly added soil, inch at a time over a couple inches at a time over several years, you might be able to lessen the root, the roots that are coming up out of the ground. I mean, like silver maple or even these hybrid maples that are a cross between silver and red maple actually grow in along river bottoms, and they're adapted to some of that, you know, where sand gets, you know, in a flooded year gets up over the root system and they, you know, get covered and they recover. It's not ideal, but it can be done if you hire someone or do some research to do it the right way. Yeah. Other than that, yeah, you if that's a huge issue, then yeah, removing the trees might be the option you have to look at.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And Chuck in Viroqua, we turn to you next. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a tree question here. I just bought some property this about a month and a half ago, and I've been cleaning it up, and I've got some evergreens. Looks like there's like 14 of them in a 5 by 6 foot section. Looked like somebody, you know, might have bought them as, baby plants and put them in and just forgot about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if I could transplant them this time of the year. It's, some of them are pretty big, like this white pine is maybe 15 feet tall, but some of the trunks are, less than an inch or so.
And are they all pines, or it's a mixture of things?
There's a mixture. It looks like a blue spruce here, some white pine, and then
maybe some arborvitae,
balsam maybe fir, okay. Balsam fir or something.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, you could the biggest tree that might be the one you keep right where it's at, and then and if there's some that are real close to the trunk of that or something, you might you might sacrifice a few. Are they, and the thing is, when I think about those trees and are that tightly packed together, oftentimes they're very, you pull them apart and they're one-sided or, not the greatest form to them. But if that doesn't bother you, then certainly you could move those. And I would do that close to spring, though. While they're still dormant, close to the springtime. You don't want to do it now because you will disturb.
March, April?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Most conifers don't really break bud until June. Mid-June or even later. So you do have some time then. And just do your best to preserve as many roots as you can while you transplant them. And then in the new site, water them in really well. Mulch that root system and then keep an eye on the watering through the season. And you might lose a couple, but might be worth
Well, I've got about 4 acres open here that I'm not sure what I'm going to do with.
Okay.
I've got some that's lawn, but the rest of it's just, and the pH is 7, so.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. That's good for, it's a clay soil, pH 7.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Lynn in Westby, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great show always. Ground ivy, such a problem. Had it in my garden. Now it's spread. I live out in the country, so it's now spreading to pasture. It's all over the place. What to do?
Ground ivy. Are we talking about like crown vetch? Are we talking about creeping Charlie?
Does it have little blue flowers in the spring?
It's
heart-shaped leaves, kind of?
Kind of heart-shaped leaves, yeah.
Okay.
It's not the... I thought creeping Charlie was when you pull it, kind of stretches.
Yeah, it's almost like viney when you pull it. It kind of usually comes up in long stemmed pieces, kind of.
Yep, viney.
Uh-huh. That's what you think you have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, probably... I don't know how you feel about using...
Is it called Creeping Charlie then?
Creeping Charlie is typically, that's what it's. But, herbicides is probably the quickest way to take care of it. And, I would just go to Garden Center and see what they have, talk to the professional there on what's labeled for Creeping Charlie. I know some people will take a rake and they'll try to kind of like rake it out if you don't want to use a chemical. It sounds like this is a pretty huge area, and that might not be practical.
We're organic, and it's in the pasture now.
Okay.
Well, if you're organic, it is almost impossible to get rid of. To be honest, even if you use chemicals, you can get rid of it 1 year, and the next year it's back.
Yeah, it'll come up from seed and such. What are you wanting to be growing in that spot? Do you want to grow some type of grass for pasturing and for the animals, or is it?
Yeah, pasture for the animals, and then, of course, it's growing in my garden. That's, you know, that's not an issue so much.
Right.
My concern is it's just going to keep spreading, and it's going to choke out the rest of the pasture.
Yeah, it seems to me that, I mean, if you were to get, you know, pasture grass, you know, cultivate that, get that growing,
it's going to compete.
Yeah, I mean, because Creeping Charlie never gets more than a couple inches off the ground. And so if you get a plant that's a foot or more, it'll be, you know, it'll be above the Creeping Charlie. It'll get the light and nutrients it needs. And, you know, you might even out-compete the Creeping Charlie in some aspects.
Well, we pasture cattle, so the pasture gets eaten down. So, it's not...
Yeah.
And you can't rotate the... I mean, you can't
somewhat,
eliminate the cattle, move them to a different part of the pasture and, you know...
Yeah,
we
do somewhat, but it's not for the whole season.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Probably the way to, you know, if you were going to try a new grass, I would first go in and kind of rake out the what I had there as best you can, because I know from my own experience on my own lawn, if I go out there with my daughter in the spring and just pull it, it has a hard time. It takes a while for it to get back. And if you get a pasture grass going in there, at least then it's got a chance to outcompete.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're not going to use a chemical.
So let it grow up so that it can shade out the Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
Or at least be compatible with it. I mean, you know,
you're never going to
get rid of it wholesale, but as long as you can grow the other plants you want to grow, you know.
Yeah, my concern was, I know I'm not going to get rid of it completely, but my concern was that it was going to...
take it over.
Deplete and take over.
Yeah.
There must be some research and experts out there on pasture, you know, how to create a pasture and different pasture grasses and such, don't you think, Larry?
Actually, if you go to the learning store, uwex.edu, that's the UW Extension Learning Store, there you will find, and you can go... their whole list of publications, and you can type in pasture grass, growing pasture grass, and you will get some materials, some educational materials on it. And then you will also see the authors, and you will be able to contact authors. If you're not finding what you want or what you need, maybe your little specific thing, you can call one of those folks or email them, because the email addresses are typically there, and get some answers directly from them.
Yeah, I would think, you know, with all the organic pasturing of animals.
Well, we have a whole center on campus now,
sure,
on the College
sure.
of Ag campus that deals with this.
Yeah, I would think that would be a good place to look.
Yep.
And so in my lawn, of course, it's there too, so that's mowed all the time, so...
Well, you know, it's green, it's thriving.
Yeah.
If you're playing golf on it, you know.
Just tolerate it.
Sometimes, at the garden, we are now using compost teas on all of our turf. And what we have found is that the white clover has thrived under this compost tea regime. And, you know, some people find that offensive, and I love it. I love it when it's in bloom, and when it's not, it just coexists, and there's it's no big deal, and it's providing
nitrogen,
right? And so, hey, it's green, it's doing its thing. I'd rather have that than, you know, bare soil or some other more noxious weed moving in, and it doesn't seem to negatively affect the grass one bit. So sometimes, you know, we just have to, I think, tolerate some of that and say, hey, it's okay. It's got a beautiful blue flower.
Actually, in the spring, there are a lot of... It's one of the first to flower, and so for the insects that are are out there, it's actually quite useful because it's practically the first thing that flowers in
the
spring.
Yeah, I would think the bees must...
Bees love it.
We see
and
that a lot on our...
You're talking about the clover now, right?
Or the creeping Charlie.
You'll see a lot of bees out there, mm-hmm. because that it's the in some many places it's the one food source they have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So something to think about too.
Yeah. I certainly do tolerate stuff in my lawn, and I do have clover in there. But mm-hmm. my concern was it was going to totally take over and kill out everything.
I don't think it will.
No. Okay. Yeah. I think if you have a good amount of sun, you know, which grass wants, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the grass will compete.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. And on to Jeff in Greendale. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry and Jeff. Hey, I've got black raspberries, and I was wondering if it's advantageous to put the canes, the new canes that'll produce this next season. Should I tie those up now, or can I wait till the spring? Is there an advantage to either?
I'm not sure there is as far as fruit production, but I would say that, you know, while they're dormant, it's going to be easier to deal with them. Because you can see exactly what you got. You can do your pruning along at the same time. And to be honest, for me, anything I can do in the dormant garden, I try to do because I have more time mm-hmm. at that time of the year. And when spring hits and everything is cranking, I don't have enough time to get everything done.
Yeah. Well, I did it. I put them up this time last year.
Okay.
To try it, and I got the same amount of fruit yield
okay.
as I did in previous years. So I was just curious if there was some type of advantage. But go ahead. Nope. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Jesse in, I'm not sure where you're from, Jesse.
Hey, how are you doing, Larry?
Oh, Presque Isle. There we go.
Thanks for having me on, Larry and Jeff.
Sure thing.
I got a question about, I've got some bryophytes that are kind of taking over my lawn. And, you know, initially I was a little bit upset about that because the grasses are really being overrun. But now I'm really kind of starting to like it. And the grasses are starting to brown in spots and really aren't doing very well. So I'm wondering if there's something that I can add, like, something natural, not fertilizer, but maybe a clover or something that I could add that would help out those bryophytes and also kind of, get the grasses moving a little bit too.
Wow, that's a great question, and one I must admit I know nothing about. I wonder. So, have the conditions changed at all as far as sun versus shade or moisture, any of those things? Where it seemed to be at a good balance before, and now it's not, or?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a very shady area, you know, and I guess we've been continually trying to plant more grass seed, you know, and nothing is really taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, people have moss, and they say, well, how do I get rid of the moss? I can't grow grass. It's like, don't worry about it. You got moss. It's cool, you know.
You have 15 seconds to answer on this one.
That's about all I got.
And I unfortunately I don't have a, you know, that shade.
Yeah,
it's a tough one, and it's not the best one to end on. But
no, I'd say, you know, just go with it. I mean, it's almost like a beautiful moss garden in a Japanese, you know, design. I just embrace it.
Jeff, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I'd love to. Thanks for having me, Larry. It's always fun.
Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. If you haven't been to the gardens ever or even recently, I hope you'll get over there. There's lots of good things going on every time of the year. It's always a great place. Go online to the Olbrich Botanical Gardens website, and you'll see what I'm talking about for sure. And thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.